And I am Bill Buckmaster, along with Tom Fairbanks. Tom, how are you today? Doing well, Tom. A thumbs up. Tom on the other side of the glass, engineering our show. It is Friday, July the 10th, 2010. Hope you had a good week. Looking forward to a very good weekend. We are live on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's Voice. We're streaming and podcasting the show for anywhere in the world listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. We also have a live stream of the program on the station, kvoi.com. Our media partners, TucsonSentinel.com, Inside Tucson Business, the Green Valley News, and Sahuarita Sun, and TucsonLifestyle.com. Our Friday Focus interview today is with Pima County Administrator Chuck Huckleberry. Joining me to question Mr. Huckleberry, Dan Shear is with us, editor of the Green Valley News and Sahuarita Sun. The Buckmaster Show live line 790-2040. Our Facebook page is Bill Buckmaster if you would like to speak with Mr. Huckleberry. And usually the way it goes when Mr. Huckleberry's a guest, no one calls in the first segment. They all call right at the end, and they all say they want to talk to Mr. Huckleberry. Well, call right now at 790-2040. Chuck, how are you?
Just fine, Bill.
Dan, how's it going?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
We had Joe Bogart, who was the committee spokesman for the group that is opposing the Pima County bonds, the seven bond questions totaling $818 million in that bond package. And he talked about, when I asked him about the roads, the $160 million, the bond that is dedicated to that, he of course admits that work needs to be done on the roads. He just says this is not the right approach to fixing the roads.
Well, Bill, I probably almost agree with Mr. Bogart in that respect. There are other ways and better ways, but unfortunately, this is the only alternative that's available to the county, and that's to ask the voters for an approval to issue a bond. Now, what we've done to make that as palatable as possible is to actually issue very short-term debt bonds, 10 years maximum, so that the life of the repair at least equals or exceeds the debt length of the bond. So that's the approach we've taken, and this is the only thing that we can actually do to in the short term to repair our bonds. In the long term, we need to increase gas taxes in Arizona and take other measures to increase transportation funding. Otherwise, we're going to be doing this again and again.
Dan Shear.
We'll be looking at seven questions on the November ballot, $816 million in bonds. Just to get a couple little details out of the way, do we know how high the interest rate could go on these bonds?
Well, there's always, in the question, there's always a statutory cap, and that's probably at 8%. But historically, we've had very low interest rates. The average interest rates on the bonds that we've issued in the last 5 years has been 2.5%. The economy is such that we do not expect those interest rates to increase dramatically during the length and term of this bond issue. So my guess is that most of these bonds will be issued in the 3-4% range.
Then all told, though, we're not paying back $815 million. We're paying back probably well over $1 billion. Is that right?
By the time that you do add in the interest, and I think we've calculated the interest in the 15-year debt period, there's probably another $200-$250 million in interest added in. So you get about $1 billion, and it's just like your mortgage on your house. You pay the principal and you pay the interest.
Okay, and have you done any polling at all on the bond? What is your sense about this?
Well, first, we're actually precluded by law from doing any polling. We have to say as neutral as practically possible. I do understand that there's probably a poll being done by the proponents. My guess is there may even be a poll being done by the opponents, and that's fine. We really don't have any sense at all other than there was a fairly large outcry from the interest groups who were interested in these bonds to let the voters decide. And that's frankly what the board decided to do, is take it to the ballot and let the voters determine whether they want to incur this debt or not.
790-2040, 790-2040. Our friend Jim Kelly has called, and Jim took our advice to call early and not wait for the last 5 minutes of the half hour. So, Jim, go ahead. You're with Chuck Huckleberry.
Hi, Mr. Huckleberry.
Hi, Jim.
I have a lot of concerns. Each of the seven questions has stuff we absolutely need, stuff that would be nice to have, and then some stuff that I personally think I would say heck no on. My problem is this. Is there a way that we can look at each line item from each question and give us what the return on investment what we're paying out as to what we're going to get back economically from each line item? I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you, sir.
Well, Jim, the first thing is that there are seven bond propositions. And if you were to then, we'll say, segregate that or to go to a ballot that would allow a voter to pick and choose on every project, we'd have 99 propositions. So that's not efficient. So what happens is that projects and programs get lumped into similar kind of objectives. And yes, you can understand clearly what the benefits are of each bond proposal by going to, when we publish it later this summer, our bond implementation plan. It will have a very detailed description of every project. It will discuss the benefits. It will discuss the scope. It will talk about the cost. It will talk about whether there are other funds being used to supplement the bonds. And we'll also have a very long, detailed discussion about operating and maintenance costs associated with that project. So you're going to be able to visit that. In addition to that, you can probably go to our bond website today and see the items that were under consideration by the Bond Advisory Committee for each project. And on top of that, later this month, you're going to be able to go to our bond webpage and look at past performance with regard to the 97 bond issue, the 2004 bond issue, and 2006 bond issue. You're going to be able to look at over 700 projects and sub-projects that have been completed with bonds. You will go to that page, hover over it, pin, and up will come pictures and details about every project that's been built.
In other words, track record.
Track record, the fact that what we say we're going to do, we actually do.
All right, 790-2040. Ingrid is next on the Buckmaster Show Live Line with Chuck Huckleberry. Hello, Ingrid.
Hello. Excuse me for just a moment. I have to turn on my radio.
Did you turn your radio down?
Sorry, I couldn't
get
to it
faster. Oh, that's okay. Turned your radio down. Thank you.
Mr. Huckleberry, I'm speaking as an individual, not representing an organization. Earlier you talked about publishing the bonds in the voter information pamphlet. Is it true that if there is a number of submissions that is insufficient in the mind of whoever is in charge of this, let's put it this way. Do you have a system whereby you require X number of letters for or against an argument? And if you don't, if that number isn't reached, that you will not publish the submissions?
Ingrid, no, that's not correct. We're required to publish a publicity pamphlet regardless of whether there's any submissions, either for or against a particular proposition, because it contains a lot of financial information, the payback information, expected interest, expected tax increases on various levels of residential value as well as commercial value. So we're required to publish and distribute a publicity pamphlet regardless of whether there are any pro or con statements.
Okay. The reason I ask is because it may have been the city involved, but the subject came up and the parties were told that there was not a sufficient number of submissions, and so they didn't print it in the pamphlet. And I was shocked.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Ingrid. Go ahead, Dan Scheer.
There is $95 million for open space in one of those bond questions. And you have said that buying open space allows us to be in what you called long-term compliance with the Endangered Species Act. Can you explain that?
Yes, Dan. This community, if we can go back probably a decade or longer, was put into economic chaos when the pygmy owl was listed as an endangered species. Developers didn't know what to do. No one knew how to comply. And we went through a lot of economic chaos based on that listing. The answer to end all this chaos when a new species gets listed is to have a multi-species habitat conservation plan. It's commonly known as the Sonoran Desert Conservation Plan. It is in its final preparation and approval by the United States Fish and Wildlife Service, and it will provide us long-term compliance with any future listing of an endangered species with the Endangered Species Act. And so that gives us some economic certainty in into the future. And frankly, this last installment of open space should pretty much allow us to comply in perpetuity.
And I don't understand, why would we need to buy $95 million more in open space to come into compliance?
What happens is that it's like a conservation bank or a bank. You have to conserve X number of acres and put that in the bank, and then as development occurs and destroys X number of acres of habitat, then they make a withdrawal from that bank, typically at about a 4 or 5 to 1 ratio, and so you have to have a base of conservation lands in the bank in order to draw credits against in order to develop. And that's really the essence of a compliance system.
So since 97, how much have we spent on open space, and is that not enough to come into compliance?
Since 97 and 2004, we spent nearly $200 million on open space. And that probably gets us 30 years of compliance. It depends upon, again, how fast the community grows. But there's been an estimate of been 30 years at the outset, could be 15 years under a high growth environment within the community. And so what has been discussed is this next and probably last major installment in open space.
So there is not a sense of urgency about $95 million for open space right now. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, yes.
Okay, it's 12:16. Chuck Huckleberry will stick around for another segment. That means you can call in at 790-2040. We're going to take our first break here, and we'll find out what kind of music. Usually we do 60s bump music, and Tom is ready to go with it. Go ahead, Tom.
Chicago in 1941. I was born in Chicago in 1941. Well, my father told me, son, you had better get a gun.
Hello?
Hey, honey. Just packing and getting ready for my flight home.
Great! You didn't forget about Adam's soccer game, did you?
Hey, it's his last game of the season. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
But you land at 4. How can you be there by 5?
No problem. I'm flying into Tucson. I parked right by the terminal, and the soccer field is only 10 minutes from the airport.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Attending Pima Community College means success for you and your family at less than a quarter the cost of trade schools or four-year universities. Partnering with business leaders, Pima creates programs tailored to help you succeed in today's high-demand jobs and offers two-year associate degrees that transfer to universities nationwide. Whether your goal is a new career or transferring to a four-year college, Pima Community College can help you succeed. Call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu. The Regional Transportation Authority is delivering its promises, completing 149 out of 200 intersection improvements, 48 of 80 pedestrian safety crossings, 108 of 200 bus pullouts, and 226 miles of 500 promised bike lanes. Since the 2006 voter approval of the RTA plan, some 650 projects are completed. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. Learn more at rtamobility.com.
Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antique, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com. Viro Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Viro Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Viro Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Viro Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Viro Amore on the web at viroamore.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. That is the Paul Butterfield Blues Band, our 60s bump music for this Friday afternoon. Chuck Huckleberry is with us, Pima County Administrator, with our Friday Focus interview. Dan Shear is here, the editor of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Mr. Huckleberry, Steve Kasachek, Tucson City Councilman, is saying that Pima County is overstepping authority when it comes to the bond ordinance. Mr. Kasachek is worried about what's going to happen after 25 years on some of these bonds. Will the city be stuck with maintenance?
Bill, both our bond advisory committee as well as the city bond advisory committee were concerned about maintenance as well. The issue is that if in fact a new project is built with bonds, the voters need to be assured that it's going to be well maintained during the useful life of the facility. If it's a building, it probably has a useful life of 35 years or longer. And I think that's the only requirement, and it seems to me to be a pretty reasonable requirement. And it will ensure that things that have happened in the past with regard to lack of maintenance hopefully never happen in the future, and that voters can be absolutely assured that if they vote for a specific project, it's going to be maintained, and they're going to have the full use of that facility over the life of the facility, and frankly, in most cases, it's 20 to 25 years or longer.
Well, I know that Allie Miller, Supervisor Miller, has disagreed with you about the life of a road repair. Ms. Miller has said on this program 2 or 3 years and the road starts to deteriorate. Are you surprised when you hear something like that?
No, not really. I mean, there's common misconceptions, and people sometimes talk before they get the facts. And if you look at most of the road repairs that are structural, meaning they're pavement replacement or rehabilitation, milling is typically what it's called, those projects have lives of 10 to almost 20 years. And so you really have to understand the useful life of a facility. There's actually a published document by the federal government that talks about useful life of public infrastructure. And so we'll probably use that as our guide to talk about how long these particular projects have to be maintained by jurisdictions or the county. In the case of roads, frankly, have to be maintained forever. We're dealing today with roads called Silver Bell Road, reconstructing it, and it was built in the 1880s. And so you need to maintain these roads. And the problem with maintenance in the past is that, frankly, Arizona hasn't kept pace with providing transportation revenues. Last gas tax was 24 years ago, and fleet fuel efficiency over the period's almost doubled. So there's no real question that we need more transportation financing and funding to adequately maintain our roads.
790-2040 for your questions or comments for Chuck Huckleberry. Here's Dan Scheer.
If we could turn our attention to the proposed Rosemont mine, we're awaiting word on two federal permits and then anything that might happen after that. And some people expect those permits to be okayed possibly by the middle of next year. Is the county technically done with the Rosemont mine issue?
I would say, Dan, county's technically done in the sense that we're not the permitting agency. We really don't have any control over the issuance of those permits. What we do have is the ability to make public comment as a local agency and local government, and we do intend to comment, and the comments that we make will be largely dependent upon the mitigation that's required by the federal government in issuing those permits if they issue them. We want to make sure that there's adequate mitigation for all of the Rosemont mining activities that would occur in the area, and that mitigation is adequate and it's meaningful. So we're done commenting ourselves, and our next comments will be based on what the federal government in issuing permits requires as mitigation.
Some people expect the Rosemont mine issue to end up in the courts. Would Pima County be leading the charge if that happens?
It would be my recommendation, and again, I only make recommendations, I don't make decisions, that the county not pursue litigation. I think that there are probably enough other individuals or organizations will do that I don't think we need to involve the use of public tax dollars in doing so.
All right, let's go to the live line, 790-2040. Richard has been waiting very patiently. Go ahead, Richard.
Yes, Mr. Huckleberry, we of the Pima Association of Taxpayers are concerned about how our money is spent. And we in Pima County, as you know, already pay more in property taxes than any other county in the state. Also, our water rates, our sewer rates have gone up. Our county, city, and Pima College property taxes are already going up, even without the added burden of this bond issue. Now, the second issue that we have is, back some time ago when Brooks Keenan was a county transportation director, he accused you, Mr. Huckleberry, and two members of the Board of Supervisors of rigging road construction contracts to go to your political attributors. That was in the Arizona Daily Star. At the time, you said you would ask the county attorney to arrange an outside investigation. We'd like to know who did that investigation. We have found no evidence of anything happening.
Okay.
Well, sure, Richard or Dick. The issue was fully investigated by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and that's the end of it. There was no such confirmation that occurred. So that's just typically what happens. People can accuse people of anything.
And as far as the property taxes being the highest in the state?
Well, with regard to property taxes, our tax rates are high, but they're high because we have no other revenue sources such as sales taxes. Our property tax rate is slightly higher than Pinell County, but Pinell County has 2 half-cent sales taxes to supplement their revenue source. So you really have to examine total taxation, and I think when you look at total taxation, you'll find that we're not as high as other people would like to make us out to be.
All right, let's see if we can work one more call in. Marla would like to speak with Chuck Huckleberry. Go ahead, Marla.
Good afternoon, Mr. Huckleberry. I was wondering, how can you justify spending $200 million in open space purchases and another $95 million when the county has not paid our deputies their promised step pay increases for the past 7 years? Thank you.
Yes, Marla. First, we can justify the $200 million in open space because the voters said spend the money. We went to the voters and asked them whether they should spend that money for open space, and I think both of those questions on open space passed by a 70% approval margin. So we're carrying out the desires and wishes of the voters. With regard to the sheriff's deputies' step increases, that is a pay plan, and pay plans are not contracts. They're what you call a plan. And with regard to deputies, there are deputies that have been hired, and they may be in the same step, but they've gotten pay increases along the way, and most of them are earning, for example, if you look at 10 years ago, they're earning 30% more than they did 10 years ago. So that's kept pace with much of the inflation, and it's not as if they've not received raises over that period. Our annual and average pay for a deputy is about $53,000 a year, and that doesn't include overtime or shift differential or off-duty pay. And if you begin to add those things in, it's significantly higher.
Okay, Dan, quick question to wrap it up.
Yeah, Supervisor Valadez suggested in an editorial for the Arizona Daily Star that the county had to increase taxes this year solely because of the $23 million in shifted costs from the state. Is that accurate? Is that the only reason?
It is the only reason. We had structured our budget going into this year to have a tax rate level and hopefully have that tax rate level the following year, which is the fixed school year next year. But the state, basically, in balancing their budget, shifted $23 million of cost to the county. We actually absorbed most of it, all of it, but eight. And that's what the current litigation is with the state today about. We think that was an unconstitutional tax shift because the county has never been involved in additional state aid to education, which they have always paid for 35 years. And this year they decided that Pima County should pay it.
All right, we're going to wrap it up with Chuck Huckleberry, 12:31 on the Buckmaster Show. Mr. Huckleberry, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay, Chuck Huckleberry with us on our Friday Focus interview. Dan Scheer of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun will stick around. And Dylan Smith, the editor-publisher of TucsonSentinel.com, will join us and we'll talk about some of the top stories of the week here in Arizona. Mr. Trump is headed for Phoenix. Tomorrow, we'll talk a little bit about that right after this.
Blues with a feeling, that's what I have today. Blues with a feeling.
Attending Pima Community College means success for you and your family at less than a quarter the cost of trade schools or four-year universities. Partnering with business leaders, Pima creates programs tailored to help you succeed in today's high-demand jobs and offers two-year associate degrees that transfer to universities nationwide. Whether your goal is a new career or transferring to a four-year college, Pima Community College can help you succeed. Call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu.
Hi. Wouldn't you like a voice like mine talking about your business? Saying things like, thank you for calling, or press 1 for hours and directions. Well, it can. Cox Business offers Voice Manager, allowing you to get a professional voice to record your voicemail greeting. And with my voice, you'll need to warn whoever manages your lead gen data because your customer base is about to expand. If you don't like my voice...
There's always mine.
Thank you for calling. All our customers are important to us.
How do you like that?
I think mine might be more appropriate.
You don't know that.
I can do fancy accents.
As good as this.
Make a great impression before you answer the phone. Cox Business Internet and Voice Manager is only $99 per month. Plus, get your first month free. Bundle and save today. Visit coxbusiness.com. Ends 8/30/15. Includes Cox Business Internet 10 and Voice Manager Essential. Excludes taxes and fees. Visit coxbusiness.com for details. Actual speeds vary. Other restrictions apply.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting the stories missed by the mainstream media. Our sources bring you regional, national, and international news from a different perspective. Opinion from Emil Franzi, Phil Richardson, and other top national columnists. Plus, Eric Peters with auto reviews, Bob Garver on movies, Rebecca Guthrie on books, a section on Western heritage, and sports coverage, too. It's a cross-section of information found nowhere else. SOAZNewsX.com. Published Mondays and Thursdays. Subscriptions are free at SOAZNewsX.com.
Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary works to end the senseless abuse of horses and burros so these noble creatures can live free of pain and suffering. Its ranch in Amado is home to dozens of rescued equines who receive special care as they await new, loving homes. Won't you help? Visit equinevoices.org. Equine Voices, a voice for all equines who cannot speak for themselves.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. We're pushing toward 12:35 on this Monday afternoon. It's our Friday roundtable. Mr. Chuck Huckleberry was our Friday focus guest. Dan Scheer was here with me during the interview with Mr. Huckleberry, and now we are joined by Dylan Smith. Dylan is the editor-publisher of TucsonSentinel.com, Tucson's online news service. Dylan, how are you?
Great. You know, when I was driving over here to the radio station, it was almost hard to keep my eyes on the road. The sky is so beautiful today with all of those clouds all over the valley. It's amazing.
But very little rain so far.
You know, we're still waiting for a good downpour over on the west side. We've gotten some sprinkles here and there and one short blast of rain, but the little patch of grass on my backyard is looking very, very sad still.
It is. Well, hopefully you'll get something very soon. Dan, a quick follow-up to you brought up the HUD Bay operation that they're hoping to do in the area of the Santa Rita Mountains south of Tucson, the open pit mine, the copper mine. You took a tour this week. I think it's the third time you've actually been out to the site, correct?
Right, that's the Rosemont site off of 83, and this is the first time I've been there since HUD Bay bought the property about a year ago, and I wanted to just see kind of what their thinking was and what they've been doing for the past year, and where it stands is that they're still waiting, of course, on two federal permits. They expect those in about a year. Then who knows what would happen. It could be tied up in the courts for a while, and I think HUD Bay fully expects that that's a reality. Let's just say that doesn't happen. They would get working pretty quickly here on constructing, you know, the mine operations, and they kind of went through what that would entail. You don't wait till all of that's completed to actually start digging. So the digging could be, you know, definitely within a couple of years. So this thing's going on what now? Eight, nine years?
Yes.
Yeah, that has been batted around, and that's long even for getting mine approval in the United States.
And with that change of ownership, has there been any shift in the overall plan down there at Rosemont, or is it still essentially the same idea to dig in the same place, put the tailings in the same spots?
It is the same place. It's they have done a lot more coring. They finished that, I think it was January, just to kind of see exactly what was under there. And, of course, they have all the records from Augusta Resorts, the previous owner, but they're pretty much just redoing everything because they want to know what's down there and whatever. And there are no huge shifts at this point. I'll tell you this, though, they are putting a huge premium on understanding the culture of Southern Arizona, the needs of the people, but business is business. They're still going to move forward, of course, with the mine.
And business is business. The day you were doing your tour, the Chinese stock market, Dylan and Dan kind of hit the skids and really kind of bottomed out before the Chinese government intervened with huge, massive infusions of cash. But my point is that the commodities market has just really, really dived. I believe copper now is at a six-year low. So in some respects, a slow boat, continuing the slow boat through the minefield of all the litigation is not perhaps such a bad thing for the HUD Bay people.
No, and I think I would agree with you. We did not talk specifically about this, but there certainly was, you know, a little bit of the elephant in the room type of a thing because, you know, we all have known what's going on with copper prices. But I've been here 6-7 years and, you know, up and down, that's just kind of the way it is. And so for them, though, long term, and that's the way they look at it because it's probably a 22 to 25 year mine, we need copper. And so they're not going to have any problem selling it. For how much? There's the question.
Yeah, how much profit they will earn in the course of that quarter of a century is completely dependent on international copper prices.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we've certainly seen a number of copper mines slow or even stop when prices get so low that it's not profitable anymore. So.
But I'll tell you, though, for them, and they mentioned this kind of off the cuff, that one of their mines elsewhere, if they were just to stop everything, they're still costing them $10 million a month. So it's not like you shut down and you're saving everything. So there's a lot of strategy involved in that type of a decision.
Dan Scheer and Dylan Smith with us on our Friday Roundtable, 790-2040. Folks more than invited to come in and join in the conversation. Dylan, I spoke with Victoria Steele yesterday on the show. Victoria announced this week she is in, both feet in, throwing her hat in the ring. Let's see if we can think of another cliche. to be in the...
It's official. It was a pretty big cliche from her press release.
Congressional run in CD2. And at this point, Dylan, she appears to be the only Democrat who is involved with the possible challenge to Martha McSally.
There are, you know, some people still sort of putting their finger to the wind. Steve Farley has made it pretty much as clear as a politician can make anything clear that he's not interested in running, even though his name keeps getting mentioned, as I just did myself, continuing that thread. But there are, you know, some other folks who are either talking about it themselves or being talked about. But she's the only one who's actually really put her name out there and continues to do so. We saw Bruce Wheeler say he was thinking about running and then decide not to.
Because and anybody. It's my trouble that.
Anybody who's thinking about taking on McSally at this point is going to face a. Big fundraising challenge.
She's got money, and she has only 6 months under her belt, but she's been productive during that time, and she's been around, out and about. And, you know, Victoria, so you had a very good interview with her yesterday, Bill, and she revealed a couple of things to me. The most interesting thing was that it took a caller to prompt her to talk about what truly is the biggest issue down here, which is the economy. She's talking about water, and she's talking about abortion, and she's talking about Social Security, certainly important issues. But then she goes on, you know, climate change is the single most important issue in the entire world. Okay, can we focus on Southern Arizona, where it's really about jobs? She missed the boat in that interview, and you gave her opportunity after opportunity to bring it up, but it took a caller to do it. I was really surprised at that.
It's going to take a lot of money.
Indeed. I haven't had the opportunity to pull up the actual FEC reports filed by McSally, but she's continuing to brag about how much money that she's pulling in. And if you take a quick look at Victoria Steele's Act Blue fundraising page, which is, you know, certainly not the entirety of the fundraising operation for a congressional candidate, but that's where people go to donate their $5, $10, or $15 online, she's pulled in $1,817 over the past couple days.
Whoa.
A big hill.
Okay. Mr. Trump is coming to town, not to this town, but he's coming to Phoenix, and apparently they needed a larger venue, so they're going to be at downtown.
It's not an enormous venue. It's not like he's going to fill a stadium or something like that. He's going to be in a ballroom at the Phoenix Convention Center that holds about 3,000 people.
Okay.
And they're giving away tickets. So I imagine...
he's a curiosity still. Let's face it. Let's face it, yeah.
Predictably enough, a whole lot of people who are not the biggest fans of Donald Trump are going to spend some time... perhaps not listening to him.
And unavailable and out of town.
Well, no, yeah, I mean, a lot of folks on Facebook are encouraging people to show up and protest him and drown him out. So.
Oh, okay. I was talking about some of the leaders of the Republican Party. Yes.
We've seen just about every major Republican in Arizona wanting to have absolutely nothing to do with this event.
But isn't he polling number two among the GOP presidential candidates? I mean, he's doing pretty well, actually, isn't he?
Well,
why would you pull away from a winner?
Polls at this point are...
I know.
Just... things I can't say on the radio because I'll get in trouble.
Not
with
worthwhile.
The FCC.
Please
don't. There's statistical noise. I mean, if you ask somebody now, you know, you have to narrow things down to likely voters to have any sort of serious take. And who at this point says they're a likely voter? only people who are either very, very politically active or very, very loony.
But it is embarrassing for the Republican Party to have Mr. Trump talking the way he is about Hispanics, and here the Republican Party, the head people with the party, have been doing this push to try to encourage Hispanics to join the Republican Party. So that's embarrassing.
Well, and to speak in such sweeping terms, that's what gets me, because there's a little bit of truth in what he says. Yes, we do have some criminals coming north of the border, mm-hmm. but guess what? Not all of them are. And as he said, there are you know, some good Mexicans. Good grief, you know.
If you look at immigration overall, people who are actually immigrants, whether they're legal or illegal immigrants, have a lower crime rate than the general population, a significantly lower crime rate.
Right.
If you're here illegally, you are trying to attract as little attention to yourself as possible. You don't run around committing crimes for the most part. A few terrible incidents attract headlines, and of course, you know, especially here in southern Arizona, we see plenty of people who are smuggling drugs or smuggling people. But overall, that characterization is just utterly unfounded, and really, we shouldn't even be talking about. Nobody should be talking about Donald Trump. This is somebody who likes to attract attention to himself and has absolutely no plan to do anything. I mean, do we want to put this guy as the head of the U.S. economy? This is somebody who could not make money running a casino.
But on the other hand, I think we are the ones who should be talking about it, because the media in southern Arizona, and I'm talking south of Casa Grande, are the ones who truly understand what's going on at the border. And
I mean, overall.
But absolutely.
If other people are paying attention to Donald Trump, we need to be the ones pointing out that he's just full of nonsense.
Well, and I have found that even people in Phoenix are really disconnected with what actually is happening at the border.
Yeah.
And so we, as the mainstream media, need to be out there telling people, you know, this is really what's going on down here. And the people really are in touch, and I'm glad for that. So I'm not surprised that he's out of touch. I'm a little surprised when I hear it out of our own state legislature, though.
One gentleman who will not be in town for the Trump appearance will be Senator McCain, who through one of his spokespersons said today he's not planning to return to the Valley this week. Senator McCain was on the show this week, and it was good to reconnect with him this week, and he talked a little bit about, he's pretty optimistic, Dylan, about Fort Huachuca and the A-10, and McCain has a lot of juice, as they say. He's head of the Senate Armed Services Committee.
Yeah, we're seeing this week that the Army is planning to continue with some very significant reductions in force overall.
40,000 troops reduction?
And, you know, continuing on with that in future years. You know, we're no longer fighting two major wars at the same time. We really don't need as large of an army. We don't need that many boots on the ground as we had a decade ago. But it seems like the impact of this on southern Arizona will be fairly minimal. I think there are about 100 people at Fort Huachuca who mm-hmm. are scheduled to lose their jobs.
And that comes,
and certainly there is a little bit of an economic repercussion from that, not just from them, but from all the people with that. Who,
yes.
You know,
certainly
are in that community.
Sierra Vista, certainly. And that's 100. They already had, 100 over the past 18 months that have been lost there. So about 200 soldiers.
But there are still several very important missions going on at Fort Huachuca. It's not a base that's teetering on the edge. There are, I can't remember which base. There's one that's scheduled to lose about 10,000 people.
Wow.
Well, and we have to remember that the decisions need to be made for the national good, not necessarily the good of the individual bases. And so, you know what, you kind of take your hits and you throw them in. We're not being hit nearly as hard as we could have been on this.
And everybody has an opinion, of course, on the Confederate flag situation. And Facebook has been full of opinions on it, and it's all over social media. We kind of brought this up a couple of weeks ago, Dylan, here on the roundtable about the upcoming Founders Day ceremony, August 20th, when traditionally one of the seven flags displayed is the flag of the Confederate States of America, because for 80 days, Confederate soldiers basically were here in Tucson, after all the Union troops had gone back east to take part in the Civil War.
And then when some more Union troops were coming into town, they ran off.
So
I think there's a big difference between honoring the Confederate flag in an installation in front of a government building and using it in what is essentially a presentation of living history. We can't deny the things that have happened, but that doesn't mean we have to stick them in a place of honor and pretend that it was something wonderful that Tucson was for a short period part of the Confederacy.
It wouldn't surprise me, though, if even though the commissioners have been saying the flag will stay for the Founding Day ceremony and for the rodeo parade, it would not surprise me if the decision is made to maybe not do a flag ceremony this year.
And that would be too bad. I hope the commissioners follow through on this. And as Dylan was saying, the flag is all about context. Where do you see it? And what message is being sent by where it is being placed? So for me, that's what it's all about. I took my very first trip ever to the South about 2 years ago. And in some places, I was a little surprised to see it. In other places, I was not surprised to see it. And it was okay. It was part of the history. So very interesting question. It's been a very interesting debate to follow and just see it blow up in various ways over the last couple of weeks.
We don't want to, sanitize our museums.
No,
that would
no.
be completely ridiculous. But certainly, for me personally, the move that's been going on across the South to not have that flag flying in front of their Capitol buildings is a very appropriate one.
Right.
All right. We're going to wrap it up right here on the Friday Roundtable, Dylan Smith. We can find your work, Dylan, at TucsonSentinel.com. And folks who perhaps have not visited Sentinel.com, what can they expect to find?
Well, we're Tucson's independent online news organization. We're a nonprofit, and we're really just dedicated to bringing people news and information and commentary from people who are in the know and get people thinking about what's going on in this town so we can all make smarter decisions, much like you two guys do.
Yep, and supporters really pay for your service, right?
Indeed. We are a nonprofit. We rely on our readers and local small businesses to keep us moving along.
Okay, and Dan, things going well at the Green Valley News and Sahrita Sun?
We're doing terrific. On July 1st, we launched a redesign of the Green Valley News, so get a hold of the hard copy, and we're very proud of it.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
All right. We'll be right back with Weekend Watch with Matt Russell.
Hello?
Hey, honey. Just packing and getting ready for my flight home.
Great. You didn't forget about Adam's soccer game, did you?
Hey, it's his last game of the season. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
But you land at 4. How can you be there by 5?
No problem. I'm flying into Tucson. I parked right by the terminal, and the soccer field is only 10 minutes from the airport.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
The Regional Transportation Authority has completed more than 650 projects to date, including pedestrian safety crossings, intersection safety improvements, and bus pullouts, plus new sidewalks and bike lanes. The Regional Transportation Authority also funds new signal technology to keep people and goods moving. We're improving safety and regional mobility for you. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. Learn more at rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Are you a landlord by choice or by force? Experiencing a job transfer and don't know what to do with your current house? Want to move but can't sell your current house? Hello, my name is Ken Adams, co-owner of Rincon Ventures Property Management. Rincon Ventures has a fully automated accounting process, electronic payments, and 24-hour access to your accounts. With some of the lowest rates in Tucson, Rincon Ventures has grown rapidly in this down economy. Let us show you why. Give us a call at 881-2258 right now and experience the difference. Rincon Ventures, where service is a fact, not another empty promise. 881-2258.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Join us Monday for the Monday Political Face-Off featuring commentators John Munger and Vince Robigo. Also, we'll talk with Hank Amos, the CEO of Tucson Realty and Trust. Buckmaster, noon to 1 on AM 1030, KVOI The Voice, with anywhere in the world live streaming, podcasts, and show archive at buckmastershow.com.
That is, of course, the theme music for Weekend Watch. Weekend Watch with Matt Russell is sponsored by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, where they are very excited about next weekend's annual Hummingbird Festival. And this will be a great opportunity to see many species, many varieties of hummingbirds. There'll be music, plenty of food, and lectures about those very colorful hummers. All of that is going on at Little Toad Inn and Tavern near Lake Roberts in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. You can find out about the many places to stay, like Pinos Altos Cabins, and the many things to do by visiting their fine website, southwestnewmexico.org. Let's welcome now the food and beverage writer for Inside Tucson Business and award-winning Tucson publicist, Mr. Matt Russell. Matt, how are you?
Bill, I'm doing great. It's Friday. How's that for an answer?
And I never can get enough ice cream, well, really year-round, but especially in the summer.
Yeah, check it out, Bill. We have several craft ice cream purveyors all across Tucson, and 10 of them are going to be going to battle tomorrow night in the second annual Ice Cream Showdown at Maynard's downtown. Now, it all gets underway at 6 p.m., and for only $10, you can sample all 10 entries and vote for who you think has the screamiest, creamiest ice cream in town. Now, categories include Best Overall and Most Inventive and Kids' Choice, and a portion of the proceeds will go to Ben's Bells. It's the Ice Cream Showdown, a great idea for the weekend. Now, Bill, I'm partial to rum raisin ice cream. What about you?
Oh, there's one that's always been my favorite since I was a little kid, and that would be the mint with the chocolate chips. That's
so
just
good.
Yeah. Oh, put a pint of that in front of me, and it would be very hard to stop with just one, maybe a half a pint. Usually the whole pint might disappear. But yes, not appropriate when you're trying to lose a little weight. How about National Mojito Day?
Yeah, I see that Saturday is National Mojito Day, and you don't have to look far to find some magnificently muddled mojitos in Tucson. And while virtually every bartender in town can likely shake one up, I say try the watermelon mojito at Zinburger with Montezuma rum and crushed lime and fresh mint, or the black and blue mojito at Wildflower with a lovely silver rum, muddled mint, fresh lime, raspberries, and blackberries. Does this scream summer or what? I say happy National Mojito Day, Bill. Let the muddling begin.
Yeah, good way to cool off. First the ice cream and then the mojito. And for those that would prefer a nice cold beer.
Yes, our friends at Zona 78. You know, they're always thinking creatively about food and beverage pairings. And tomorrow night at their River Road location, they're going to be featuring a four-course dinner that will pair some great dishes with both beer and spirits. Now, Zona 78 is partnering with the Mother Road Brewing Company, as well as the Arizona Distilling Company, where each course will be thoughtfully paired with both a beer and a cocktail. Now, we're talking crab, salmon, beef, and salad courses with light and dark brews and some sophisticated spirits. It's only $45 a person for the Zona 78 cocktail and beer dinner tomorrow night. Grab your reservation today.
And Matt, what do you write about at Inside Tucson Business this week?
Well, Bill, one of my most favorite flavors of the summer season is peach. And this juicy fruit is at its absolute best right now.
And I recently sat down with some local folks who are doing some delicious things with peaches, both on a plate and in a glass, and you can see that story and all of its succulence in this week's edition of Inside Tucson Business.
Peach ice cream, it's always good.
Peach ice cream, peach pie, peach pancakes, peach extravaganza.
Yeah, I love peaches. Thank you so much, Matt Russell.
Have a great weekend.
You too. That's going to do it, wrapping it up this week for another edition, a week of shows for the Buckmaster Show, and you can find all of our programs in our archive at buckmastershow.com. The Bill Buckmaster Show is a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, wholly responsible for its content. On behalf of our team here at KVOI, Mr. Tom Fairbanks, giving me a big smile and a salute on the other side of the glass, Ed Alexander, Jerry Cross, everybody associated with making this such a fine radio station, and of course, Rosemary Brandt, my executive assistant, of course, Ray Allen here at the station. Everybody wishing you a wonderful and safe weekend.